Hello, and welcome to Railway Mania. This episode's a little different in tone to the others we've done so far. Whereas those have dealt with technology and history, I want to talk a little about some musings that we've been having on the greatest hobby in the world. Firstly, coming into the hobby as an adult. There's a fairly common pattern to many grown-up rail and model rail enthusiasts. Lots of people were interested in trains when they were kids. Perhaps it was trips to preserved railways or the gift of a train set for Christmas, which is what it was for me, although I'm told that as a baby, my wallpaper had trains on it, so perhaps there was no hope. There's almost a trope or routine of people going through childhood with trains, then putting them down or putting them away as a teenager when other pastimes become more appealing, such as dating or fast cars, as well as the demands of getting a full-time job. Subsequently, lots of people make a return to the hobby, perhaps when their kids grow up or when they retire and have more leisure time. What's rarer is for people to get interested in railways as adults with not much in the way of prior interest. Today I'm talking to Pat James, who I met for the first time in person at the Nailsea Model Railway Exhibition, although we'd previously communicated on Instagram.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
The first interviewee on Railway Mania. Can you just tell us a bit about yourself first?
So I'm 33 years old. I have a wife and two sons, live in Bristol, and I'm a chef at trade. Probably been modelling for about 6 to 7 years.
You weren't really that into trains as a child. So a lot of people follow the normal habit of sort of having a train set as a child, being really into it then, putting it down when you become a teenager, and then sort of rekindling the interest as an adult. But for you, it was different. So, as I understand it, there was a seed planted early on, but not really a hobby.
Yeah, so my grandpa on my dad's side worked for the Great Western Railway as almost full career, apart from when he went away in the war. And from a young age, he took me to a few preservation railways and stuff. He took me on the trains, you know, the old intercities and stuff. I liked Thomas as a kid. You know, I wouldn't deny that. I was really into it until probably the age of about 4 or 5 years old. My uncle had quite a large Great Western model rail in his shed. But I was thinking about this the other day. I reckon I was probably about 8 when he kind of revealed that to us all, and he had this big railway. You know, I was very much aware of that and you know, the steam era. But apart from that, I didn't really know a huge amount about it. My dad isn't really into it at all, even though his father worked for Great Western. He knows bits, but, you know, he's not a train sort of guy. So there wasn't a huge amount there. I think pretty average, really, for most people. So I had done sort of DJing and all sorts of bits and bobs throughout my teens. Even as a young man, I did a bit of DJing, but I had my first son when I was 21, and I got custody of him, so I moved back home with my parents. And because I was working as a chef, there were a few nights. But obviously the nights that I wasn't working, I was at home. I wouldn't, you know, just leave my parents all the time to raise my son.
Yeah, you don't want to exhaust all your free childcare tokens.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, I'd be at home and stuff. And I tried, I'll tell you what, I'd been to Hendon. I'd been to Hendon, which is an aeroplane sort of museum. And at the end of going around with my dad and my little boy, I bought two kits, built them, and I hung them from his bedroom ceiling. So then I bought two more kits and I made them and I hung them from his bedroom ceiling. And then I thought, oh, I actually quite enjoy doing this. And then I thought I would try a bit of the sort of model game stuff. I'd tampered with that a little bit in the past, but just wasn't interested in playing the actual game. So that never really stuck, to be honest. And then, you know, as most little boys, he really got into Thomas. So I kind of went with that. I bought as much of the sort of wooden trains that he could play with. And I was a bit of a loss end with it, so I started buying my own, I suppose. The initial plan was to sort of go with an N-gauge layout, but didn't really have much knowledge or direction for it. I certainly wasn't thinking of railway companies or anything like that. You know, just getting a bit of track and a bit of train to run on it, you know. And then from doing loads of research on it, because you do, you know, you kind of get sort of sucked into it, I discovered, 009 and narrow gauge, really, having sort of spent a lot of time reading up on narrow gauge and learning about Wales and the history with narrow gauge trains. I suppose I kind of fell in love with it a little bit. I suppose I kind of discovered a link back to Thomas the Tank Engine when they had those little trains, Rhenaeus and Scarlowe, and how amazed I was at those trains rather than the bigger ones, the normal ones, because they were different, I suppose, and, you know, and they were smaller, tucked away, small little stories about them, but a bit secretive almost. And I suppose from that I realised that, yeah, I really enjoyed it and I really liked learning about it. And I still now love reading about narrow gauge. I don't know what it is that's kind of, you know, created this passion to be so strong for it, to be honest. It is a bit odd, but...
You know. So you pretty much settled on 009 early on. Do you think that the subsequent efforts you made, kit building and scratch building your own stuff, is because 009 wasn't very well covered at the time?
Definitely. Because I knew what I wanted, but the only way to get that is to make it and to do a lot of research. And actually, I find in a lot of cases to find a better way. I still don't own any of the ready-to-run stuff. I've really stuck with the kit and the scratch because although I don't, you know, I haven't managed to produce a layout and a full range of stock quite yet, is I enjoy the process of making it and making all the little individual parts. And I love learning new skills. I love it. I love, you know, starting off in one material and then working towards building it in another material.
So let's talk a bit about the Cape Box Challenge then. This was a competition that was run by British Railway Modelling in 2018. And just tell us about what the parameters were first, so if someone's not heard about the challenge before.
Yeah, I think it was 8 inch by 8 inch cube shape, and you've got to build a model railway diorama, but it had to have two railway pieces, so i.e. a locomotive and some track, or a loco lamp and a bit of rail. So the scope for it was humongous.
And you ended up with an honourable mention, I believe. So you were one of the top place runners-up. And what was the name of your module?
It was Cornish Foundry. I never really named it. It was a massive rush in the end, really, to be honest with you. I enjoy doing the challenges because, as I said before, I could develop skills that I don't necessarily have yet. And look at ways of the better ways of doing these particular tasks. I'd never modelled water, so I thought, okay, well, I'll put some puddles in this one. I scratch built some buildings for it. There was a little element of like kit bashing plus using clay as well. I hadn't made any track at that point, so I made some track for it. And then luckily I had a very nice loco to go on it. So I took some influence from the Doxford shipyards, and they had the Robert Stevenson's tanks, 040 crane tanks. I actually had one, and I was in the process of building it as a 009 locomotive. The kit was designed to be built as a 009 kit as well, but it needed heavy modification. Unfortunately, I hadn't got the loco running correctly, so it is a static model, but I had to complete that kit as well as build my Capebot challenge. It came down to the wire and I managed to get it entered. But yeah, they were really pleased with it. I got a lot of good feedback from it. And yeah, I modelled water and did all the bits I wanted to do. It's quite heavily weathered. It's quite a dark looking piece, but I think it looks really good, and took all my own pictures of it. I got a huge amount of good feedback through my Instagram account from it. I just really enjoyed doing it. I really enjoyed doing the challenges.
Are you going to do any more?
Yeah, definitely. Next time I see one that I really want to sort of jump into, I'm on it.
And you recently found yourself spending a lot of time in hospital with nothing to do, but in a way, your model railways were a focus for you during that period.
Yeah, well, I was diagnosed with a brain tumour at the beginning of the year, which was a huge shock to me because I'm quite young. They kind of rushed me through the hospital process. But in that time, I've had like a month where I basically did nothing. So I modelled, and then went into hospital. So obviously I had to put everything down, tidy up the workbench. I do a lot of drawing. I've always been into drawing. I have a digital program that I can draw straight onto with an Apple Pen. And yeah, so when I was in hospital, I spent a lot of my time doing that and part of my recovery. It was great. It was very therapeutic for me. The modelling is really, because I'm a chef and I work in such a busy, intense environment, the modelling is really like a bit of meditation, really. It kind of chills me down, calms me down. I can concentrate on something. I can develop my own skills. The drawing does the same. You know, there's tons of different drawing programs out there. So I might try different programs, different methods. Yeah, I love it. I really enjoy it. And, you know, trains are a good focus for drawing.
We're going to change tack a little bit. So this next question is really about how you have found the model railway community to be, because you've been active on a couple of forums, but not massively. So where did you start with that?
So there was a forum called Narrow Gauge and Branch Line, which was run by John DeFraser in it. And it wasn't really, you had to apply to sort of get into it. And I was part of that forum, and it was really good, and I got, you know, quite a lot out of it. But I haven't really paid much attention to much of the others. I kind of do a bit every now and then. I'll have a dive around and have a look at some stuff. But I don't play much of a role with that. And the societies, I you know, a bit of ashamed of myself. I should play more of a role. I have quite an intensive job, and I've got two kids, and when you do have a bit of time, I don't have time for, you know, doing stuff for societies. Eventually I would like to do more, but I'm deep into building my own layout and my own stock. So I feel when I get to a point that I can actually give something and maybe go to an exhibition, I probably will get a lot more involved. But internet stuff, obviously I do follow a fair bit of people's sort of own personal blogs, which have been brilliant. And I think I've probably learned more from following modelers that I'm interested in the way they model and the methods they use. I've learned a lot from those blogs, and I've put that to my own modeling, to the point that I think I understand the hobby a lot more. Magazines, obviously read the magazines quite a lot. And then Instagram, which has been almost 2 years, I suppose, I've been putting up my modelling stuff, set up a modelling profile on there.
And if people want to find your work on Instagram, where should they go?
If they just search pats.ng.work_bench, they'll find all my stuff on there. It's a private account, so if you just request, I'll 9 times out of 10 I'll accept. There's quite a lot on there. There's hundreds of pictures that I've put on there. I can be a bit bad at forgetting to take pictures when I'm building a project. So sometimes you'll see the start of a project and then it jumps to almost completion. But I'm trying to get better, and I have been better at it, I think, in recent builds.
And so this Instagram is separate to your personal Instagram?
Yeah, separate, yeah. I run it separately, mainly because it is solely just the stuff I do in trains, and I wanted it to be that way. It's like what happens on my workbench. There would be other things, but I only do trains on my workbench these days, I suppose.
And so, because we met each other through Instagram.
Yeah.
Have you made contact with any other people through that?
Yeah, there's quite a few people that I avidly follow. And there's lots of people that I just keep contact with. There's lots of people that will write small little comments on the stuff that I do, which I really appreciate. Modelling trains is not something that I talk about with many people. You know, narrow gauge modelling is quite an obscure part of the hobby.
It's hardcore.
Yeah, people don't know about that. I don't know, it's so obscure that I just don't really have anyone to talk to about it. I don't keep in contact with many modellers. You know, those little comments I get from people on Instagram really sort of make the stuff I'm doing worth it, really? And it's lovely. I get a lot of like really positive support. Oh, I've never had a negative thing said. So, yeah, I do really appreciate that.
You've touched on it a bit. What do your friends and family think about your hobby?
Yeah, I think it's good. They've always been quite positive about the stuff that I've done. My wife's never been the biggest fan of it, but then again, she would never want me to stop. She likes me being creative. She likes me doing stuff. And there are other things I do as well that, you know, she's always been a fan of. But supportive, yeah, she's supportive. I couldn't say she wasn't, but, you know, it's modelling trains at the end of the day.
And your friends, what do they think about it? I mean, do you talk to your friends from back home about it at all?
Yeah. My closest friends know I do it. They ask questions occasionally. They'll come over and see what I've been doing and ask, you know, they look at my display cabinet and say, oh, that's cool.
Can they tell one from another?
Not really. I never go into too much detail with them and they don't show that sort of interest in it. But, you know, a passing comment or a small conversation is about as far as it goes. But, you know I have it as a hobby. They appreciate that from a young age I was sort of at home, you know, a lot more than as a young man would be, really.
A lot of people, when they've got kids and they've got railways, they'll have almost a sacrificial railway for the kids to use. Is that the case with you?
Yeah. So originally when I sort of started building, it was kind of the idea that my eldest son, at the time, he was my only son, would have something that he could look at and, you know, become part of building as he got older. Unfortunately, this never came together in time. So eventually, when my second son came around, his grandparents purchased him a Thomas and Friends Hornby set, which is the sacrificial sort of playing one for seeing trains running. And also, modelling narrow gauge in the way I do, you're never going to see the round and round train set that kids want to see. So, yes. But again, it does seem a little bit like a hobby in the closet a little bit, maybe. I don't know. But not because I'm trying to keep it there. I'd happily tell people. I don't struggle with that fact either.
But do you think that's a factor of you having been an adult already when you started?
Yeah.
So you grew into it?
Yeah. If someone asked me, I'd happily say, I really do. I'm into this. But I feel it's my interest and my hobby. And unless it was to the modern railway community, probably wouldn't go voicing it and splashing it everywhere. I think it is a kind of hobby you can do that. And it's also a hobby that you can pick up and put down. But there'll be times in the year that I won't touch a model for a month. But then there'll be times where that's all I'm doing. It's on my mind a lot. Because when you're building a project, you got to stay with it. Otherwise, you forget, don't you? If I start a kit, I want to stay on top of it until it's to a point that I feel like I can put it down.
Is anything really ever finished?
Well, that's it. That's it. I don't think I've managed to finish something entirely. I have, but not many. And I'll tell you what, I do stop and start projects quite a lot. So I'll start something and say, right, no, I'm not going to do that now. That's now going to be cut up and, you know, modified to now work for this. I think recently, if you do follow me on Instagram, you would have seen that I had a train that I was perfectly happy with. Just by looking at it for an hour, I just butchered it. Because I worked out a way I could have done it better. There were a few small things that I could improve on. So I did, and I feel like I did improve it. But it was a bit of a shock, I think. I think people were a bit shocked when I put a picture of it at the beginning and then just chopped the back off and took the whole rear of the cab out.
And were you reticent about approaching it as a new hobby at all?
I think because I had built a couple of Airfix kits, I'd already made that sort of jump into it. It just seemed like the next step to get something moving and to have a sort of diorama landscape to fit around the model. I've always appreciated it. From looking back at my uncle's one years ago, the time and the sort of the atmosphere that he's created. I really liked it, and I like to sort of see it and try and replicate that myself in my own way.
Pat, thank you very much for coming on episode 3 of Railway Mania. I think we've covered quite a lot here, and we've probably got far more than we needed to, and I can probably spin off a lot of content into another future episode.
Oh, well, you're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Many thanks to Pat for coming on the podcast and being our first guest. In the second part of this episode, I want to give some more thoughts on coming out as a railway enthusiast as an adult. And I was thinking about this because I was recently watching a documentary on Netflix where the story is that there's a gay guy who lives in New York who's very self-conscious about the sound of his voice and is trying to find out why there is such a thing as a stereotypically gay voice and how he developed one. One of the suggested reasons he covers is that some people unconsciously change their voice tones and emphasis in order to show their preference to the world, because unless you know someone, how are you supposed to know if they're a potential match for you? The reason I've linked to this is that I've sometimes likened publicly announcing to the world that I'm a rail enthusiast to coming out of the closet. By the way, I absolutely know that the two things are nowhere near the same difficulty level. These are just shower thoughts. What's been really interesting since is that several of my friends, who I already knew for many years, were also closeted enthusiasts, and we had no idea that the others were into trains. We were all missing something in our manner that identified us to each other. Why did we feel like we couldn't be open about it, and why did it come as such a relief that, after we did, we found that there were others like us? There's an ongoing topic on RM Web about this, and I was reading one forum post from a guy who's a signalman on the Real Railway, and even there, enthusiasts seem to have been advised to keep their hobby a secret or risk being teased for it. He said that the giveaway was that when a heritage diesel or steam loco trundle passed, certain members of the team would stop and stare at it, thereby revealing themselves. For me, I think the problem is mainly due to the social stigma that anoraks had, certainly during my childhood, lampooned by the media as they were. In case you don't know, anorak is a British slang term for a train spotter or railway enthusiast. It's really interesting though, reading Locomotive Panorama by E.S. Cox, who was a locomotive designer for many major British railway companies. He says that when he started his apprenticeship at Horwich in 1917, is a direct quote, apprentices who were specially interested in locomotives and who could distinguish one type from another were regarded as cranks. A crank being a contemporary colloquialism for an enthusiast, a bit like anorak was in the 1990s. Perhaps this is a sign that 'twas ever thus. On the other hand, from some accounts, it seems that train spotting and collecting locomotive numbers was Britain's most popular hobby in the 1950s. Recently, a colleague asked me how train spotting actually worked as a pastime. The best analogy I could come up with was that it was like a low-tech version of Pokemon Go, the augmented reality smartphone game that swept the world a few years ago. There was a competitive element and something of a shared community around it. I also recall reading articles of Railway Modeler when contributors would casually mention being in a model railway club at school or at university. The concept of such a thing boggled my mind at the time. I would have been mortified if anyone had found out my hobby when I was in my teens or early 20s. In fact, I recall a time at school where the teacher was reading out everybody who had overdue library books, and my heart skipped a beat when they announced to the class that I had not yet handed the Clevedon branch back in. At least the title was sufficiently ambiguous. It's a good thing that I was punctual with my return of Stand Your Princess Coronation Class Valve Gear and Cylinders, A Pictorial History in Colour. Why was I so worried? Perhaps I had seen the ribbing that fellow enthusiasts got in the media and I was terrified of being teased or embarrassed by my peers. After all, simply being a teenager is almost a consistent state of being embarrassed. It's not all doom and gloom, though. From what I've seen, the rise of the internet has been great for our hobby. I was one of the last generations of people to go through my formative years without the modern internet or social media. For example, I didn't even have my own computer until I was in my 20s. Forums and messengers were beginning to come online during my teenage years, but not to the extent they are today. What I think is good for younger enthusiasts today is that access to the internet via their personal computers or mobile devices has the potential to access forums and social media groups where there are other like-minded people. They find their tribe, so to speak. I was recently talking to a friend's son who is 9 years old, and YouTube is the main way they watch video, not TV or on-demand channels. If you take a look at YouTube channels such as Sam's Trains, SDJR7F88, New Junction, etc., There are other young people showing their hobby off and talking about it all the time. You can watch hours and hours of chat about trains. The diversification and opening up of visual media, I think, has been brilliant because people can publish their own channels about the things that interest them the most. Certainly, for me, internet forums were my gateway back into railways, and particularly railway modelling. I think that the internet and the faster communications of our age have accelerated the acceptance of different lifestyles and promotion that hobbies are actually a good thing. Take a look at the sewing community, for example, or the social media platforms entirely dedicated to sharing things like illustrations or photography. The off-sited rise of geek chic culture, I believe, has meant that the older stereotype that being knowledgeable or enthused about a particular subject as being a bad thing is receding into the past. When I tell my friends these days that I volunteer at a steam railway and build models in my spare time, the response is almost always positive. Maybe this is partly due to having better friends, but I do hope that the days of standing next to somebody who shared your interest, but the chances of neither of you knowing that the other likes it, are soon to become a thing of the past. Although in hindsight, between me and my friends, it should have been obvious we were all railway enthusiasts because we were all appropriately dressed for rain. A small note about tribes. I'm recording this in May 2019, and what has been a case in point over the last week or so has been the disaster at the Market Deeping Model Railway Club show in Stamford. The night before the show, some vandals broke into the exhibition hall and trashed all the layouts and stalls inside. It was a sickening sight, but what is truly heartening is that the community had rallied together, with many people also volunteering their skills and time to help rebuild destroyed items. The community spirit in the face of adversity like this makes me extremely proud to be a part of this tribe. Thank you, as always, for listening to Railway Mania. If you want to see more episodes, please go to railwaymania.net. We're also on Twitter, at railwaymania.net, and Facebook. The group is called Railway Mania. This episode's been a bit of a departure from the norm, as I said in the intro, but I hope it's given you something to think about. If you'd like to join the discussion, please feel free to take a look at our Facebook page, Railway Mania. We're also on Twitter. The handle is at railwaymania.net. If you'd like to send in ideas for shows or share your experiences, there is a contact form on the Railway Mania website. The address is railwaymania.net. Thank you for listening.